KMXT in Kodiak. This is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, the great MSC standoff of 2015 is over. No second opening for Southeast King trawlers. And are Kenai's Reds just late like everywhere else? Or... dot, dot, dot. All that and more coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Kodiak Area Native Association's Tobacco Prevention and Education Program. Canada believes everyone has the right to breathe smoke-free air. More information is available at 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
On Tuesday, Glenn Reed of the Pacific Seafood Processors Association and Rob Zuanich of the Alaska Salmon Processors Association signed an agreement to transfer ASPA's Marine Stewardship Council certificate for Alaska salmon to the PSPA. Seafoodnews.com reports the agreement is for all Alaska salmon harvested in 2016 and beyond. PSPA has pledged to make the certificate available to any Alaska salmon-producing company that wants to be part of the client group on an equal cost-sharing basis. Zuanich, executive director of the Salmon Processors Association, said the decision to transfer the MSC certificate to the Seafood Processors Association is in the best interest of the industry. The transfer means that all Alaska salmon producers will have the choice to offer certified sustainable salmon from both MSC and Alaska's RFM sustainability program to the global marketplace. Summer king salmon fishing is over for the Southeast commercial trawlers. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game announced last Friday that more than 150,000 Chinook have been caught during the first king opening earlier this month, and there will be no second opening in August, which will be only the third time in 15 years that there will be no second summer opening. Troll biologist Patty Scannis says that catch rates were higher than expected given the preseason abundance forecast. The fleet caught some 20,000 fish per day during the eight-day opening. All numbers so far are preliminary as Fish and Game is still receiving fish tickets. The late and hopefully still great run of sockeye salmon might finally be making its way into the Kenai River. KDLL's Jenny Nyman tells us more.
The good news is that the bulk of the late run of Kenai River sockeye salmon might finally be making its appearance. The bad news is for the fishermen who tried to harvest them before this point in the run.
I think I'm just going to head back tonight. I don't know. If it's better, I might have stayed longer, but you know, it's okay. But I'll maybe try later.
Mike Baker of Anchorage was sitting on the cooler he had hoped to fill at the north beach of the Kenai River on Monday evening.
Pretty slow, you know, I mean, just kind of hit or miss.
Fish counts underscore that assessment. The sockeye sonar counter in the Kenai River posted unimpressive numbers over the weekend. 17,500 fish Friday and 20,000 Saturday. That number jumped a bit Sunday to 49,000 fish, but that only brought the cumulative total of late-run Kenai River sockeye to just under 300,000 fish, not nearly as many as would have returned by this point in a more typical run, says Pat Shields, commercial fishery area management biologist for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
It's no secret to most people here that are dip netters, that are in-river fishermen, that are commercial fishermen, that the Kenai sockeye run is late. We don't know yet if they will return at forecast. We're expecting about 3.5 million Kenai-bound sockeye to come back this year. So it's too early to say where we are with regard to how strong the run will be or how weak the run will be, but it's most certainly going to be late.
Managers are hopeful for the return, though. Other runs in South Central, including Chignik and Bristol Bay, are returning on a belated schedule, but in good numbers. The same is expected for the Kenai.
If we thought this run was on time or early, there would be no more fishing for anybody. There would be no personal use, no sport, no commercial. We would shut this thing down. We would lock it up and tell everyone to go home. We don't believe that. We believe this run is late. And so, yes, we're watching it very closely.
A positive sign came Monday at Fish and Game's test fishery off Anchor Point. Through July 19th, the test nets had only logged 218 index points. By Monday afternoon, the test nets were on pace to get more than that in one day alone, with fish hitting all the sites stretched across the inlet.
I don't want to make too much out of one day of test fish indices, but it's a very strong day. That's a good sign. When you're looking at a large index and you see it spread across all the stations, that's a good indication that you have had fish come into the inlet.
That's what the dip netters who were arriving Monday were hoping to hear, as opposed to the ones leaving after a mostly unproductive weekend. Lynette and Tim Blessy of Eagle River got to Kenai on Sunday, but didn't even bother getting their net down to the water until just about high tide Monday afternoon.
It has been looking a little slow. We've heard that the run was slower getting here. We hope that doesn't mean that there's just not that many fish out there. We hope that it's just because they're late. I haven't seen them being pulled out at the pace I have in past years.
They shoot for fishing the Kenai around July 18th every year. But just because that's when they schedule to come fish doesn't mean that's when the fish will arrive.
That's why we stay a week.
Timing, as always, is crucial in fishing. In this case, rather than having the luck of timing a fishing trip when the sockeye are flooding the river, logging time in the water seems to be the difference between catching and just fishing at the Kenai dipnet fishery. Patricia Burnell was celebrating her biggest day yet Monday, with 9 fish hitting her net.
Well, yesterday my brother had luck, and my mom and my dad. Now today's my luck, so I was out from 6 a.m. till 6 p.m., and I got a rock. But today I'm glad I'm catching my share.
The sockeye sonar estimate for Monday showed continued improvement at 53,600 fish, breaking the 350,000 mark in the run. In Kenai, I'm Jenny Nyman.
You're listening to the Alaska Fisheries Report. Hear the show online on demand at kmxt.org.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amsea.org. or 907-747-3287.
A fire destroyed a sailboat, part of a dock, and some equipment owned by the Jackalof Bay Oyster Company earlier this week. KBBI's Shady Grove Oliver has more.
The fire started Sunday evening in Little Jackalof Bay, about 7 miles southwest of Homer on the south side of Kachemak Bay. Johann Willrich was out on a porch at about 10 p.m. in Little Tutka, a neighboring bay. He says he saw black smoke that looked larger than a garbage fire, so he and other residents hopped in their boat to find out what was going on.
Drove over toward Little Jackalof Bay, and as soon as we turned the corner, we saw, I had a handheld VHF, and someone was reporting that there was a boat on fire and that the dock itself was on fire as well. As soon as we turned the corner, we saw the boat was fully involved, and we got there just in time to see the mast fall over.
The dock and boat are the property of the Jackalof Bay Oyster Company. Its owners declined to be interviewed but confirmed the losses. Willrich says they tried to reach the boat that was on fire, but it was hard because of the farming operation.
So there were oyster nets strung out all around the dock, a couple hundred yards in either direction. So it was very hard to get to even approach this burning boat.
They were able to cut loose some equipment and another boat and tow them out of danger. Brian Barrett is the chief of the Seldovia Volunteer Fire Department. They responded just after 10 p.m. and tried to salvage as much as they could.
Myself and one other city firefighter was able to get onto the dock and cut loose a raft with their processing equipment and their oyster picking skiff and get those away from the fire. One of those rafts was on fire, and we put that out and then pulled that all off the side.
Barrett confirms there was significant damage to the dock and several floats. The boat did sink, and quite a bit of equipment that was stored on the dock was also destroyed.
I don't think we'll ever know definitively the cause, but the fire originated in a shed that had a running generator in it that was on one of the floats across the dock from the sailboat. Fire originated in that building, burned the adjacent floats, swept across the floats, and caught the rigging and the sail on the sailboat on fire and then burn the boat.
Stephen Russell is the interagency coordinator for the Department of Environmental Conservation. They responded early Monday morning. He says there was no sheening on the water in the area and no known petroleum product spillage, but they will keep an eye on the situation.
Jackalof Bay area is a very sensitive area, not only environmentally speaking, but commercially speaking as well, with the extensive mariculture operations that are going on in that area. Certainly DEC will do anything we can to assist the responsible party and the Coast Guard in mitigating any potential environmental threat.
The full cost of the losses to the oyster company's operations are not known at this time. In Homer, I'm Shady Grove Oliver.
Other responders included the Coast Guard and the Seldovia Village Tribe's Barabara Heights Fire Department.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits. Marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
British Columbia officials are delaying permits for an open pit mine near a river that flows into the ocean south of Ketchikan. They say Pacific Booker Minerals has not proved it can keep toxic water out of nearby waterways, which are filled with salmon. The developer says it has. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld tells us more.
Hi, I'm Joseph Kochoff with Investment Pitch Media. Today, we feature a company with a near-term production project located in northern British Columbia, Canada.
This YouTube video promotes the Morrison Project, owned by Vancouver-based Pacific Booker Minerals. It's about 200 miles east of Ketchikan.
PBM has completed a feasibility study and is proposing an open-pit mining and milling operation for the production of copper, gold, molybdenum concentrate from the Morrison deposit.
The proposed mine site is in the watershed of the Skeena River, which enters the ocean about 50 miles south of the border. Juneau mine critic Chris Zimmer says Alaskans do catch fish out of the Skeena.
If we see crashes in salmon populations in rivers like that, it could affect Alaska's fishing. So even the rivers that don't flow right through southeast Alaska are still pretty important to our own fisheries here.
Pacific Booker turned down an interview request and answered only half the questions submitted in writing. Pacific Booker says it's provided the information needed for British Columbia to issue permits required for construction to begin. BC's mines and environmental agencies disagree.
We haven't said no, we haven't said yes. We've said you're heading in the right direction, but you have a lot more work you need to do before we can think about granting a permit.
BC Mines Minister Bill Bennett says the company has not proved the project design is foolproof. He says the province needs more information showing its tailing storage ponds won't leach polluted water into a nearby lake. Earlier this month, his agency and BC's environmental ministry told Pacific Booker to take another 3 years gathering that and other information. Pacific Booker quickly issued a press release saying it's consulting with professional advisors, quote, on the best method to address the issues raised. That's likely to be legal action. The company sued the province after a 2012 permit application was rejected. That case went before British Columbia's Supreme Court, which ruled in its favor and sent the issue back to the government. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
And that's all for this edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KCAW's Rachel Waldholtz in Sitka, KDLL's Jenny Nyman in Kenai, KVBI's Shady Grove Oliver in Homer, and Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.